At RCR, we're on a mission to revive honest media, to report on critical censored stories, and to hold those in positions of power to account. But to make this happen, RCR needs to grow, and grow fast. For that, we need your support. Our Foundation Members Club is now open. Join us today and play your part in bringing back media you can trust. Learn more at www.realitycheck.radio/members and see how you can join the mission that's making a difference.
It's time for another Health Hacks this Monday morning here at Reality Check Radio. Glenn Davies, reversalnz.co.nz, is back with us. Dr. Davies, welcome in again.
Yeah, thank you for having me, as always, Paul.
Okay, so we've had quite a bit to think about recently. There's been those health hacks to take yourself to a higher level on health, the 11 of those we heard a few weeks ago, type 2 diabetes, and then, well, yeah, bad food, for want of another term. And we're kind of here to talk a bit more about that. Not so much, you know, specifically go through all the foods, but I get the impression the wording, the descriptions are all wrong, basically, aren't they?
Yeah, it's exactly right, Paul. The words we use, whether we use pre-diabetes, diabetes, even hypertension, if we use insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, they focus on the result. And I would love to rename those conditions with a name that focuses on the cause of the problem. My issue is I can't come up with the name. And I think the listeners to the show are probably some of the most intelligent consumers of media in the country, probably without doubt. You'd agree with me there.
Totally agree with that. And also very conscious of health as well. Very conscious.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that the listeners might help us come up with a better name for diabetes. So this is the one I've come up with so far, but I don't think it's ideal, but I'm calling it bad food disease. So okay. I'm renaming diabetes and pre-diabetes as bad food disease, but I'm hoping that the listeners might help us come up with a better name than bad food disease.
You've got me thinking. It's quite a simple concept. If you name things what they really are, and that might be, you know, not very technical, let's say, then people can understand that so much more easily. Do we not do that? Why don't we do that?
Yeah, well, medicine has its own language. I think you increase your vocabulary by something like 50 to 100% when you go to medical school, and it's a code. It allows doctors to efficiently, or health professionals to efficiently, communicate with each other, but in some way it excludes the people who most need the information from the information. I remember understanding that the Catholic priests initially did their sermons in Latin.
Yep.
No, so the population couldn't understand them. You know, I think there's an element of that in the way that doctors communicate. What I'm sort of trying to develop here is, you know, what does diabetes actually mean to somebody who's not trained in medicine in the street? I don't think it means very much. Bad food disease, you know, I think people will start to get the concept. Probably a better name might be ultra-processed food disease, but does that start getting a bit too technical? And then,
What does that mean? That's the thing. That point you made about the mass in Latin. In fact, I think there was a movement, or it was illegal to deliver the mass in English.
Yeah,
because too many people would know what you're talking about. Like, you know, it was dangerous to have too much information out there, let's say.
And also you remove the mystery, you know, like when it's in Latin, it was mysterious and mystical. And to some extent, there's that element of medicine, isn't there? And why can't we just use simple language that everyone can understand?
And it's not just diabetes. It applies to a whole lot of things, health-related things, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. So what if we called it bad food disease and then we sort of divided it up into categories? So I've called the first category early bad food disease. So what do I mean by early bad food disease? So this is sort of from the age of 10 through to perhaps the age of 40.
Right.
It was last week we talked about ultra-processed food, and 80% of a teenager's diet in the Western world is ultra-processed food. It's stuff that comes out of packets. 80%. You know, 80% of teenagers are eating bad food. And it's not surprising that 80% of US adults have insulin resistance. You know, the fact that it's the same percentage number suggests to me that there's got to be some connection between insulin resistance, which is pre-diabetes, and eating 80% of your diet is stuff that comes out of packets.
What about mental health too?
Yeah,
related to the, you know, that what you've just said there.
Yeah, so completely true. You know, what we eat has such an important impact on our mental health, our mood, and exercise, and getting enough sleep, and getting enough sunlight. All these other, and not being lonely. You know, all these other lifestyle factors beyond nutrition contribute absolutely to mental health.
If you can't think properly, because you're essentially malnourished.
Yeah,
really, is what I'm.
You know, we need these vitamins, minerals, proteins particularly, to build the neurotransmitters which control our mood. So, you know, no mystery there.
Yeah, you go to your counselling session and go home and rip open a packet of muesli bars or something like that. Okay, so early bad food disease. So,
early bad food disease. Yeah,
yeah. So you'd be saying, yeah, well, that's obviously a clear case of early bad food disease.
And then we move on to, I think, you know, I've talked about the next category possibly being called compensated bad food disease. So the body can still handle all of that insult, but it's having to create a whole lot of altered hormonal responses and exaggerated hormonal responses that put a lot of stress on the body to cope with the consequences of the bad food. And how does that manifest? That probably manifests as the middle age spread. That's the extra kilogram of fat that sits on the tummy.
But kilogram, also, just 1 kilogram? Come on.
Well, one or two, you know. I always laugh at us cyclists who spend an extra $5,000 to buy a bike that's a kg lighter, whereas we could lose a kg off the tummy, look better in our lycra, you know, the mammal thing, save ourselves $10,000. But anyway, the middle age spread, but it's gout. And it's hypertension. You know, these are the manifestations of compensated bad food disease. This is insulin resistance, but insulin resistance is a really difficult concept to explain. I think a lot of health professionals don't fully understand it. So calling it compensated bad food disease, the body is producing a whole lot of excess hormones, which creates a stress on the body, and it manifests as the middle age spread, gout, hypertension, being overweight. You know, yeah. I think that makes a lot more sense to a lot more people.
Speaking of cyclists, just have to say this. If you've got a battery powered bike, you're not really a cyclist, are you?
Yes, you are.
I've seen them going up the hill without any effort. I've got to see effort.
No, I'm not with you on that one. What I've observed is, you know, with the battery powered bike, I'm now seeing a whole lot of people out there cycling that we wouldn't have seen before. So I actually see it as a really positive thing, and I'm a big fan. I haven't got one yet myself, but you know, when the time comes, if it means that instead,
you mean when
of
your legs
out,
don't work anymore,
we live in Kinloch, you see, and we've got big hills on either side.
Yep.
So to ride a track, you got to go up a significant hill. So No, I'm a fan.
Yeah, all right. It's just it looks too easy to me. I'm just saying. But at least you're out and about. So I even wonder if the word compensated is a little diffuse, yeah. A little blurry. Maybe we need to find another word there that really nails it.
Yeah, then that's where I think we need help from our super intelligent listeners to help me out there.
Our so I'd love brain. Some people. Yep.
The statistic, though, is that 80% of US adults have compensated bad food disease. And that's the really concerning part is it's now become normal. You know, when 80% of the population have this, it's normal and it loses its urgency. You know, this fact, I've heard people say, I got all the way to 60 before I needed my first medicine. People, it is not normal to take medicines. That is not a normal state. You know, you look at these blue zones or traditional societies, it's not normal to take medicines. You know, this is a consequence of decompensated bad food disease. And it's not normal not to be able to get off the ground. It's not normal not to be able to run. You know, 60-year-olds should still be able to run and get off the ground.
I do. I can.
Yeah, and I can too. I'm not 60 though, but you know,
I ran to the top of Mount Victoria Sunday evening.
Well, congrats! Yeah, that's
it took good. A while, but I got there, right?
Yeah, you know, and it's normal to be able to do all those things that you could do when you were 40, you know, and then this idea that it's normal to have some medicines at the age of 60, it's not normal to be able to run at 60. Those are dumb ideas.
Done. Yeah. I had a chat which was really interesting, and that was with Jeffrey Tucker, okay. Who set up the Brownstone Institute. And he made an interesting point, which has sort of stuck with me. The current thinking on health has kind of created like mass hypochondria,
mm-hmm.
and that one feeds the other. So you always think you're ill. And talking about this here, obviously a lot of people will feel not quite exceptional, yeah. Because they're suffering from, you know, compensated bad living, basically. But then that they can buy instantaneously relief from that. So it's sort of the hypochondria is kind of fuel. It's a cycle. People feel better because they're relieved of their feeling of not being healthy, the hypochondria. And of course, the medical sales benefit because people know that, you know, they're not quite feeling right. So that's an interesting sort of cycle. I hadn't thought of it like that.
I love what you just said, compensated bad living. You know, I think we're actually getting closer to a name.
Might have
was good. I just don't quite like the name bad because it's implying that it's the individual's fault. Whereas I don't think the fault is with the individual. You know, the fact that our whole society is set up around the purchasing of ultra-processed food, I don't think it's the individual's fault.
Okay.
I think the fault lies with the companies which produce these ultra-processed foods. You know, that's where the fault lies. And, you know, I don't like using the word blame. It implies, you know, that the fault is with the individual. And to a large extent, it's not. You know, if you're on a very low income, if you don't have availability of whole foods, if you can't afford the whole foods, you know, it's not your fault. It's not the individual's fault. And that's where we have to introduce government and non-government organisations to ensure that every New Zealander has access to whole foods. You know, I think that's a basic standard or a basic minimum requirement. Whether somebody then chooses the whole food over the ultra processed food, different question, but does as a minimum requirement, every New Zealander, in my opinion, should have access to whole foods if they choose to consume them.
Is there a regime that could be put in place? I'm really getting out there and in La La Land perhaps, but you know, where you can supply that whole food to people who need it, let's say. I don't know if that's based on income, but people who need it. Then, as part of that, you can be medically tested, though I don't want people being lab rats or anything. And if your vitals are within a certain range and are good, then you kind of, I don't know, there's some sort of break on what it would cost the taxpayer to keep you healthy, working against your you know, the bad food disease. I'm thinking if there's really obvious material advantages to having to doing the right thing, you know, that really incentivize it, that could work.
Yeah, that's really good. It's introducing this concept of health economics and quality of life, and health economists can put numbers against loss of quality of life, and you can very easily calculate how much you would spend to save one quality of life year.
Yeah.
You know, so that means people are still able to work, people are still able to pay taxes. It's very easy to do, and I can almost guarantee, without being a health economist or without doing the numbers, that allowing access to Whole Foods for every New Zealander would save money without a question. You know, without a doubt, that would save money. That would be good economics. But the problem with our political system, with our three-year political cycle, we don't see this sort of planning that looks into the future by 20 to 30 years, which is the kind of numbers that we're looking at. Yeah, so, but yes, that idea, absolutely, you could do it.
Because dropping GST off fresh fruit and vegetables and Whole Foods, let's say, kind of the same thing, because you're getting a monetary or a value advantage. But if you could, you know, let's say you're on 50K and you're paying 5 or 6% less income tax because the system kind of knows you're not going to be costing them anything, that's an incentive to do something, I would have thought. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
If that I love the way you're thinking, and that's the kind of thinking we have to move towards, without a doubt. If we don't, we're going to have this massive, unmanageable, unaffordable burden of advanced palliative bad food disease. You know, that's going to be the ultimate outcome. And, you know, we're expected to pay by 2040 $3.5 billion per year in New Zealand on diabetes alone.
Yep.
No, we can't afford that, not just diabetes alone. You know, when you think about all the other consequences of, using your term, you know, bad living, you know, all the other consequences of that, we just can't afford it. We have to do something now in a structured and intelligent way to prevent that burden.
Okay. Well, again, if people have thoughts on that or ideas on that, they can send them in and we'll get to them in another Health Hacks. Obviously, there's a delay between us talking now and getting those that in. But audience, feel free to add to that. I'm just thinking also, what, you know, you're getting this end of life kind of legislation in Canada, very strong there. And there seems to be a bit of creep as to, you know, what qualifies for that. That's one way of dealing with the bad living population that's costing you money.
Yeah, with that End of Life Act, I've got I think three people at the moment who are really struggling with one aspect of it. The aspect which is most difficult is you're expected to die within 6 months.
Yeah.
And there's many people, you know, and that works well for people with cancer, but there's many people with these chronic neurological conditions who are really, really struggling, and, you know, in their opinion anyway, would certainly choose to end their life using the End of Life Act. But because they're not anticipated to die within 6 months, you know, they may even have 20 years of life left. They don't qualify. That's perhaps the area of the Act that I think needs the most tweaking.
Right. Because I see in Canada now, you know, depression qualifies.
Don't quite agree with that. That seems to be a big problem.
Okay, so is that that's the compensated bad food disease period, which is your sort of your middle life experience, let's say.
Yes.
So what comes after that?
Well, I've called the next bit decompensated bad food disease, but it needs a better name. And this is what we're currently calling pre-diabetes and then diabetes. So HbA1c measures the stickiness of the blood. It's the amount of sugar that sticks the red blood cell. Less than 40 is considered normal. 41 to 49 is pre-diabetes, and then 50 and above is diabetes. And if you combine pre-diabetes and diabetes, in the US, that's 49% of the adult population. Yeah. That's nearly half of the adult population fit into that group. I hate the word pre-diabetes. I think it is so wrong, so misleading. To use Professor Grant Schofield's words, pre-diabetes is pre-nothing. You know, if you think back to this compensated bad food disease we've just talked about, you've had decades of metabolic dysfunction and hormonal overload before your pancreas can no longer cope and you start to see the HbA1c rise. You know, it's pre-nothing. I think we should ditch the term pre-diabetes. It's so misleading. Once your HbA1c starts to rise, you've decompensated and you are really, really going down the slippery slope at that stage.
Yeah.
You know, that's where we need aggressive lifestyle change. But this to me is one of the biggest crimes in medicine. We see people who have an HbA1c in that pre-diabetes range, and it just gets filed with a note, repeat in 3 to 6 months. You know, to me, this is the opportunity to apply aggressive lifestyle change. You know, this is where you really, really go hard with altering your diet. This is where you go really hard with your exercise and in everything else to turn it around, because already you are decompensating. You know, I'd love to deal with it at that compensated stage or even earlier, you know, the 10-year-olds who are eating all this ultra-processed food. But the fact that we wait until you become diabetic before we actually do anything, that's a major, major problem.
Yeah, it's so passive. It's so ignoring the problem. Is that because the medical industrial complex is only interested when medication can be made available, and you've got to then cross a threshold, actual threshold, to get to that?
And yes, it's that, and it's also the names that we use. You know, pre-diabetes, well, it's only pre.
You're not there yet.
It's not that bad. Or hell, you've got diabetes. We better intervene with some powerful medicines. You know, the whole idea is so
But don't
wrong.
Change your diet. Like,
Let's call it bad food disease. You know, we can, and decompensated bad food disease, you're kind of going, whoa, have I now missed my opportunity to make the change? And you haven't. You can still pull it back from that stage. But, you know, let's deal with it earlier.
That I can just imagine the diagnosis, the sound of it. I'm sorry, but I have to tell you, you have bad food disease.
Yeah.
That's going to get you instantaneously. It's going to like, what? Whammo.
And I love that ad on TV, you know, the bad net. You know, you've got bad net. And I'm that's sort of where the ideas come from. You know, you've got bad food disease. You're 15, you've got bad food disease. Come on, mate, let's turn this around now, because look at the life ahead of you if you don't.
And no one wants everyone to know that they've got bad food disease.
No. No, it's a bit like bad breath, maybe. I don't know.
do people, I suppose they do. It's been a while since I've smelt bad breath, I got to say. Not that I thought I'd be talking about that this morning. All right. Then we get on to, once you're in decompensated bad food disease territory, things just keep degrading, don't they?
Yeah. And then I've called the last section, complicated bad food disease. So this is where you see the complications of many decades of eating bad food. So if it's diabetes, it's insulin injections, it's kidney failure and dialysis, it's blindness, it's limb amputations. But that's not all it is, because Alzheimer's, cancer, heart disease, they are also the consequences of bad food disease. You know, and the problem with calling it diabetes is we're only concentrating on those diabetic complications, and we're ignoring type 3 diabetes, which is Alzheimer's. Now, calling Alzheimer's type 3 diabetes is getting closer, you know, because it's acknowledging that it's the metabolic impact of eating bad food that has caused the Alzheimer's. You know, should we be calling cancer I don't know, one of these consequences of bad food disease. And we now view cancer as a metabolic disorder in the same way as diabetes is. You know, that's getting closer to the truth. Now, of course, some cancers are predominantly genetic, but I think with the exclusion of the childhood cancers, cancers can be viewed to some extent as a metabolic disease and therefore the consequence of bad food. And heart disease. Heart disease, the number one killer in the Western world, is a consequence of eating bad food. So, you know, do you think we're getting closer by calling it bad food disease to identifying the cause of the problem and helping people to take control of this situation, not be passive, not be patient, not be a patient, but to be proactive in managing it themselves? You know, your blood pressure is a little bit raised at 35 when you go in to see the doctor. You have a consequence of bad food. Do something about it.
Yeah. Interesting what you just said about dementia or Alzheimer's, let's say. So can we see, are there numbers available that show, you know, one or two or three generations back where it was a more whole food diet, wasn't it? If I remember rightly, but sort of the pre-ultra processed era, was there less Alzheimer's?
Absolutely. You know, Alzheimer's is an epidemic in the Western world. You know, so there, when you look back into these traditional societies or the blue zones, which are the modern equivalents of these traditional societies, you don't see these conditions to nearly the same extent. So I'm not saying that there was never cancer or there was never dementia, but it's just extremely rare. And in these traditional societies and blue zones, 80-year-olds are jumping up from the floor. 80-year-olds are playing tennis, you know, are doing all of these things that we should be still doing at that age, you know, and we're not seeing it. And people are sort of expecting to grow old and expecting to develop these conditions. And it's not normal for that to happen.
I saw a picture of a week or so ago of Roger Daltrey. He's just turned 80. He looks 60. Ringo Starr is, I think, 83 now. He looks in his 60s. Paul McCartney. These guys, you know, just, you know, saying about, you know, jumping up and doing things that 80-year-olds should be able to do. They must have looked after themselves. It's not a coincidence.
Yeah, I'm not sure about their exact lifestyles. You would assume so.
Well, they have the money, you know, with all respect to them, because they're incredibly talented people, worked for everything they've got, but can buy the best advice and the hands-on kind of management of that sort of part of your lifestyle.
Yeah.
I suppose,
yeah.
But they look great. I mean, I was thinking, boy, if I could look at 80 like them, I'd be happy. You know, they look fit and, you know, really quite young for their age. Yeah.
Well, Paul, I have the privilege of looking at you because we're on a Zoom link. The others listening can't see you, but you're looking pretty damn good for your years, I must
60.
Say.
I'm 60 now.
Oh, you look 40. You look 40.
You can come on anytime, Glenn. I'm telling you. Okay, so let's summarize up. I mean, we've got a few ideas that we sort of riffed on here, and I'm, you know, trying to come up with a few. The audience is thinking right now, they'll come up with some, but what are the interventions that you see need to take place if we're really going to be serious about this? And don't worry about it, you know, anyone who might say, well, that's too hard to do. Forget about that, because too hard to do will be to actually manage this problem later on. That'll be the too hard bit. So what do you reckon? Yeah.
Yes, let's go back to our early bad food disease, sort of that 10 years old through to 40. I think that's where we need to focus on education. I think I've said this before, but one of the kohanga reo in our area, they were taking out of the lunch boxes the little packet of Twisties and replacing it with an apple. And then at the end of the day, giving the packet back to the child and the child taking it home. And I can remember one nan saying, I was just so embarrassed when my mokopuna came home and said, that is not ka pai kai Nan, and she said, I never put the packet of Twisties in there again. So isn't that a wonderful, simple example of education? So education needs to happen. Public health programs need to emphasize the importance of whole foods over ultra-processed food. And I then believe we need some regulation of the food industry. They need to have a social conscience in all of this. If they will do it voluntarily, even better. But if it requires some form of regulation, we have to minimize the amount of sugar that can be added to foods. You know, we talked last week about 15,000 different additives in food in the United States. You know, we need to be limiting that, hopefully to zero, but to an absolute minimum, you know, so some form of regulation in that early stage, and that education can happen in schools as well. Then when we move to that next section, this compensated bad food disease, that's where we really need doctors and health professionals to be emphasizing the importance of healthy diet and healthy lifestyles. You know, this is before it would be reasonable to start any medicines. This is where you ask people and persuade people and support them to change their lifestyle. Then once you get into this decompensated area, the pre-diabetes, you know, we need to be really, really pushing the healthy diet, the low carbohydrate type diets in that pre-diabetes range, not waiting until the HbA1c becomes 50 and starting a medicine. You know, to me, that is criminal. You know, that's just really bad. We need to be dealing with it before we've got that full decompensation. You know, and then in this complicated bad food era, you know, that's really palliative management, but that's where all the hospital specialties focus. You know, and we're putting all the money into supporting people, and those people, of course, do need to be supported. You know, I'm not saying that they don't, but why is all the money going into that end-stage palliative type care when more of it should be moving into this earlier preventative? And if you look at the dollars you'd have to spend early on compared with the dollars you spend when someone needs dialysis or kidney transplant or limb amputation or a bypass surgery, you know, think of how many people you can help with the same number of dollars educating 15-year-olds compared with, I don't know, it must be a thousand people you would help early on compared with one person later on.
And we could start now. You could start now on the messaging. That could start now. It really could.
Definitely. And we could do it right now. Do not eat ultra-processed food. Eat whole food. What is whole food? That's something that has recently been growing, walking, swimming, or flying.
Yep.
It does not come wrapped in plastic, and it does not have ingredients that you wouldn't have in your pantry. You know, it's pretty simple messaging.
Yep.
If you've moved into that decompensated phase, you cannot have sugar. You know, you are allergic to sugar. You should not have sugar in any form.
Wow.
And you must minimize your carbohydrates. You know, you can't be eating truckloads of bread and rice and potatoes. You know, you cannot do that. So eat the above ground vegetables, eat meat, fish, and chicken. You know, it's pretty simple.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how that didn't cost very much money to put that simple ad on TV.
No.
Instead of, we wouldn't perhaps be putting it on TV3 because they can't afford to pay for it. But
no.
Instead of drop out one fast food ad and put that ad in its replacement, it doesn't cost a lot of money to do that.
I think you should front it.
I'd be very happy to, but I'm sure you could find someone better looking and more persuasive than me to do it.
Well, probably could you get you to do a rap or something, you know, like a rap. But so for the young people to relate to.
I feel so passionate about this issue, I'd be very happy to embarrass myself in any way to get the messaging out there. Yeah.
Okay. And if folks have ideas on how this can be termed, maybe an impactful name for the condition, bad food disease is a pretty good one, then feel free to text them in or email 2057 inbox at realitycheck.radio. Okay, another health hacks. Thank you, Dr. Glenn Davies. Let's see what comes from this.
I'm really excited to see what comes from it, Paul, because intelligent group of people out there listening.
Yeah. And we'll talk again soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Paul.
RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.